Welcome to Season 2 of Murder in the Air Mystery Theater. I'm your host, Laurie Fagan. In this podcast series, you'll hear authors reading their mystery, suspense, or thriller short stories or a chapter from their published books, along with interviews. In this episode, you'll hear one of my short crime stories. In addition, sprinkled throughout the coming weeks, the podcast will feature radio theater-style sections from the audiobooks for my crime fiction novels. To find out why I decided to do this podcast, you can go back to Season 1's first episode, which also includes how I got into writing crime fiction. This season, once again with the help of my audio-video content creator son, Devin Hancock, we will create 15 episodes, and you'll hear the podcasts for Bleeder, sprinkled among readings from authors from their short stories or a mystery book chapter. So to kick things off on this 17th episode of Murder in the Air Mystery Theater, I'll read my short story called Murder at Casa de Gente Viejo, published in the anthology by Sisters in Crime, Desert Sleuths chapter called So West, So Deadly. Murder at Casa de Gente Viejo. Getting Old Isn't for Wimps, by Laurie Fagan. It was becoming an all-too-familiar sight for Charlie, her nickname for Charlene. First, the wailing of sirens grew closer and closer until they stopped not far outside her assisted living apartment patio doors at Casa de Gente Viejo, a beautiful retirement home in Prescott, where, as they all knew, most people came to die. Then the ambulance workers would mosey out of the red and white vehicle in no apparent rush to get to whomever they were sent to retrieve. Another one bites the dust, Charlie thought to herself, as she let the white vertical vanes fall back with a clack across the sliding glass door, and recalled a popular phrase around the retirement center, "Getting old isn't for wimps." She started to go next door to check on her immediate neighbors to make sure it wasn't one of them when she heard another sound, this time the woo-woo-woo of a different kind of vehicle. When she peeked through the plastic slats out to the parking lot, a white with gold car marked Prescott Police pulled up. Charlie's eyes grew wider as a tall female officer in uniform, hair severely pulled back into a ponytail, hustled out of the driver's side, and a shorter, stocky male officer let himself out of the passenger side, adjusting his holster as he did. Charlie couldn't remember the last time a law enforcement officer had come to Casa de Gente Viejo along with an ambulance. She knew one of the residents who played bridge on a regular basis. She couldn't remember her name. Had a son, or was it a grandson, on the police force who visited once in a while. But he came in the front door, not the back, away from the residence. No, this was different, Charlie thought. Residents were all abuzz at the dinner table that evening. But it wasn't because of the all-you-could-eat buffet. Charlie rolled in at 5:05, parking her red and black electric scooter next to a blue stroller against a wooden room divider filled with fake plants. At the big round table, she sat next to Harriet, 78, a small, completely white-haired woman who always dressed to the nines. Tonight, she had on a leopard print blouse with a huge rhinestone pin in the shape of a tiger attached on one side. "Hey, Charlie, did you hear?" Harriet said, about to burst with more excitement than when she won at Rummikub 3 months ago. "Yeah, isn't it something?" shouted Harold, 89, a thin, stoop-shouldered man from across the table. "So what's the latest?" Charlie asked, careful to sit down slowly on the chair with rollers so it wouldn't scoot out from under her. She also didn't want the others to know that she, the former journalist, didn't have the scoop and all the details.
"It was George Ryan. He's dead,"
said Dick, a burly 80-something, whose wife, Jean, sat meekly in her Alzheimer's mode at his side.
"Frank at the front desk says he thought there was something suspicious right away. The pull chain in the living room had been yanked nearly out of the wall, which triggered him to call for an ambulance. But Frank said when he went to George's apartment, the door was open and there was way too much blood for someone who had just fallen on the carpet.
"Dick, some of us here are trying to eat." Sally, a petite fake redhead with an ever-present scowl, glared across the table.
"Sorry, Sally."
Dick retreated for a moment, then started up again.
"Poor George. Frank says a metal bookend in the shape of a duck's head was lying on the floor covered with a red liquid."
He snuck a glance at Sally to see if she was going to rebuke him again. She shot him an icy stare.
"Buenas noches, folks. How's everyone tonight?"
Miguel, the dining room maitre d', swept in with a pitcher of ice water.
"Miguel, you have an update on who killed George?"
Dick stuck his glass out to be filled.
Now, just relax. No one was killed," Miguel reassured the group, continuing to pour water. "George fell and just hit his head, that's all. We'll have a service for him on Sunday at 3 in the social room."
Miguel finished his job and left quickly. There was silence for a moment.
"You say George was nervous before he got killed?" Harold yelled. "Sounds like a cover-up to me."
"Harold, turn up your hearing aid," Charlie suggested. Harold fiddled with his earpiece, which let out a loud squawk. "Not nervous, a service on Sunday for him," she continued. Dick put his napkin on his lap.
"Harold may be onto something. I think there's more to his death, and they just don't want us to know there might be a murderer on the loose."
Harold pushed his hearing device back in his ear.
"You say you ordered juice? Get me some V8, would you?"
The regular 3 o'clock Sunday church service at Casa de Gente Viejo included a memorial time for George, with Pastor Al Smith inviting those to speak about the dearly departed.
"George was such a dear man," sniffled Nancy, a rotund woman with short, thinning gray hair. "We had lunch together nearly every day since his wife passed," she continued, dabbing at her teary eyes while making sure the other women in the room knew the significance of her relationship with the deceased.
"He always made me laugh so. He had a little heart problem, but otherwise, he was very healthy. It was just not his time to go."
Nancy broke down in sobs. Pastor Smith hurried up, put his arm around her, and led her back to her seat before returning to the pulpit.
"Anyone else care to speak about George Ryan?"
he asked the group of about 25. A salt and pepper haired woman raised her hand.
"May I?" she asked.
"Of course," the pastor replied.
Elizabeth Cummings, dressed in all black, popped up from her chair, cane in hand. She briskly walked forward, barely needing the walking device. She reached the podium, hooked the cane over her arm, and looked out over the group.
"George was one of my best friends," she said stoically. "We had dinner together nearly every night since his wife passed."
She glowered at Nancy.
"He will be remembered for his wit, his wisdom, and his love of classic literature, which we often shared."
Elizabeth looked up at the ceiling for a brief moment.
"Rest in peace, dear George."
She retrieved the cane from her arm and returned to her chair.
"Is George's son here?" Pastor Al asked, looking around the room. "He thought he might stop by." "He's probably cashing that life insurance check as we speak,"
Russell Google, a short, impeccably dressed man in his late 80s, said from the audience. A few people snickered. The pastor ignored the comment.
"Anyone else?" he said. "Yeah, here, me," said Dick as he rose from his seat.
Jean got up automatically as well. When Dick tried to have her sit back down, he realized it was futile. So he brought her up to the front with him.
"George and I were both in the army, so we had a lot of stories to swap," Dick began. "I'm going to miss him. but I also hope we figure out whoever knocked him off."
That took the audience by surprise, which buzzed with shocked responses.
"Now, Dick, this is not the time."
Pastor Smith started rushing toward the older man.
"We may have a murderer running around here, and no one is doing anything about it," Dick continued,
as the pastor pushed him away from the pulpit. Jean looked confused and followed. Rebecca Beasley, the young activity director, stood wringing her hands at the back of the room.
"That's not true. The police are investigating, but we really don't think there was any foul play. George had a full life and..."
"George had a wife?"
Harold asked loudly, adjusting his hearing aid.
"I thought she died."
"Sit down, Harold," several said simultaneously. A flustered Pastor Smith quickly brought the service to a close. The group of Casa de Gente Viejo residents shuffled and wheeled themselves toward the elevator, with a few hanging back to chat.
"Dick," Charlie called to the military man from her scooter. He turned, then reached back to steer his wife away from the group to follow him. He joined Charlie with a grim look.
"I hope you're not going to give me hell for what I said, too," he started.
Charlie shook her head. "No, of course not. I tend to agree with you," she said quietly.
"You do? Have you heard something?"
"Not exactly, but I have my theories." She drove her scooter over to a sitting area and eased onto the sofa, covered in a pale blend of outdated 1970s Southwest colors.
"I overheard the investigating officers as they were leaving the general manager's office."
"Really? What did they say?"
Dick and Jean sat down as well.
"Something about, we'll get to the bottom of this," she said. "If there was nothing to it, they would have said as much, don't you suppose?"
"Yes, I think Russell Google did it. He was arguing with George last week after bridge. Of course, it could also be that good-for-nothing son of his, always looking for a handout and afraid his old man was spending his inheritance."
"Have you told anyone about those suspicions?"
"Nah, no one will give me the time of day."
"I'm going to make a couple of calls, and I'll let you know what I find out."
Charlie slowly made her way off the couch and retrieved her scooter. "See you later," she waved. In her apartment, Charlie straightened a few things and cleared papers off an extra chair. A light knock tapped at her door. Steadying herself by holding onto furniture, she made her way to the apartment entrance.
"Hi, Jay," she said to the tall young man in a Prescott patrol officer's uniform standing in the hallway. "Come in, won't you?"
"Thanks, Mrs. McKnight."
He was in his 30s with a short buzz cut, and Charlie could see muscular arms below his short sleeves.
"Call me Charlie. Please sit down."
Charlie gestured toward the chair.
"I do appreciate your stopping by."
Charlie made her way to the recliner and put her feet up.
"It's no problem, Charlie. My grandmother said you wanted to talk to me about George Ryan's death, but I don't really..."
"Oh, I know you're not a detective, but I thought perhaps it might be a feather in your cap if you were to solve the case."
Charlie looked squarely at the young man.
Well, I guess so, but I don't know. You see, Chief McDuff and I go way back. When he was sheriff in Pinal County, it was his department who captured the Tyson gang, and I covered it for the local TV station. I think if you go to the chief and ask a few questions, if you got the right answers, you just might be a hero. At least I know you would be to a lot of folks around here.
"Just what is it you know about this case?" Charlie could see that Jay was starting to see her in a different light, not just as an old woman.
"Here's what you should check on when you go back to the station," she said, leaning in to talk to the officer. The residents were all abuzz once more in the dining room, but again, it had nothing to do with food. Leslie, the retirement home's general manager, looked uneasy as she stood in front of the group, with the Prescott police chief and Jay, the police officer, by her side.
May I have your attention, please? She addressed the group. They quieted down to an eerie silence. Thank you. I am joined here today by Prescott Chief of Police Harry McDuff and Jay Jackson, who works for the Prescott Police Department and who is also Elsie Jackson's grandson. A twitter of excitement acknowledged Elsie, who was sitting in the front row, along with Charlie. Elsie waved at Jay, whose face bloomed a bright crimson. They would like to make an announcement regarding the death of George Ryan. Chief? She stood back as the men stepped forward.
Good afternoon, everyone, the chief said. I'm sorry to have to bring you the bad news, but as some of you suspected, George Ryan was murdered.
Shocked voices responded with, "Oh my," and "I knew it," before the chief could continue.
Thanks to the detective work of young Jay Jackson here, he was able to find out what really happened. Would you like to tell them, Officer Jackson?
Well, sure. Thanks, Chief. Jay responded, nervously rubbing his hands on his pant legs. First of all, we investigated allegations that Mr. Ryan's son, Alexander, might have had motive and opportunity to harm his father.
Aha! I thought it was that no-good bum, shouted Dick.
Dick, sit down, please, Leslie said sharply. Jay continued. But we have confirmed that his son was indeed at work at the time of his father's death. We also received information that another resident of Casa de Gente Viejo had a rather heated discussion with Mr. Ryan shortly after a bridge game they were both in.
Told you so!
Dick jumped to his feet.
It was Russell!
He pointed at an embarrassed Russell Google, who shook his head vigorously. Dick, stop it, Leslie commanded. That's not it at all. Russell did not kill George. Dick sat down with a confused look similar to his wife's. As I was saying, Jay continued, a resident, Russell Google, did have an argument with the deceased, but it had nothing to do with his death. They were talking about a woman they were both interested in. Bald heads and gray hair swayed back and forth, looking around the room. The realization came over the group that the woman who said she had dinner with George most evenings was suspiciously absent. Mr. Google was trying to warn Mr. Ryan that a resident, Elizabeth Cummings, was upset that he was also seeing another woman from here. But Mr. Ryan didn't believe him, and Mr. Google was angry that he wouldn't listen to him. It was shortly after that when Mrs. Cummings joined Mr. Ryan in his apartment after dinner, reportedly to discuss a book they'd been reading, when Mr. Ryan asked her about Mr. Google's comments. Mrs. Cummings later told police she was jealous of the other woman, and when Mr. Ryan dismissed it as foolishness and sat down in his chair, Mrs. Cummings allegedly picked up a bookend from his shelf, struck him from behind, then fled. Mr. Ryan was able to grab the pull cord for assistance, but by the time help arrived, he was dead. Stunned silence followed.
Mrs. Cummings is currently in the Prescott jail awaiting a court appearance, Chief McDuff noted. We will continue to investigate any and all deaths of a suspicious manner, and we want you to know that you are safe here at Casa de Gente Viejo. Applause exploded from the room as people jumped up to congratulate Jay and Elsie and pump the hand of Chief McDuff. Charlie nodded at Elsie with a smile, then winked at Jay. He gave her a big grin before being grabbed in a bear hug by another happy octogenarian.
That was my short story, Murder at Casa de Gente Viejo, published in the anthology by Sisters in Crime Desert Sleuths chapter called So West, So Deadly. It's available on Amazon, and you can go to my Amazon author page to find it. Click on the link below. Join us again next time when on episode number 18 of Murder in the Air Mystery Theater, you'll hear the first few segments from the radio theater-style podcast from my novel Bleeder called Art of the Steel. It's about a dead gallery owner, a missing painting, and plenty of suspects.
Episode number 19 will feature Phoenix author Merle McCann, who's written a short story called Who Shot the Sheriff? It is set in a fictional Arizona town along the Colorado River. Episode number 20 will be more segments of the campy murder mystery podcast Art of the Steal from my crime fiction audiobook, Bleeder. If you're listening on the podcast platform of your choice, please subscribe and leave a review or provide us with feedback. If you're on YouTube at Read Lori Fagan, please subscribe, give us a thumbs up, and click on the bell to be notified when a new episode has been released. And for some freebies, check out our Patreon page at Murder in the Air Mystery Theater. For more information, you can visit readlorifagan.com. Thanks so much for listening, and come back again, where you'll always find Murder in the Air.